Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Elizabeth Reese.
I'm Marjorie Punnett.
And this is Best to the Nest, the podcast that is all about creating strong, comfortable, beautiful nests that prepare us to fly. And Marjorie, I got to see your nest in person. And we're going to talk about that today.
We were actually together. It was so much fun. But before we get there, we want to give a quick shout out to Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. This is affordable luxury skincare from France, proven for anti-aging results. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare. What's the new code?
The new code is NEST. Isn't that exciting?
Oh, I like that one.
I know.
Use code NEST for an extra 20% off with 100% money back guarantee. Go to pourmoiskincare.com. That's pourmoiskincare.com. And I have to say, I just got back from Phoenix, where I met with my old TV team. And we know how TV people notice skin. And one of my former producers said, Marjorie, your skin, it looks fantastic. So
now,
I was
listen,
very happy about that.
That's the skincare. Because we all know that you've had a little bit of stress going on in life. And so I would say that the skincare is clutch. It's very good. Pour Moi Climate Smart Skincare, you guys, use that code and you can get to it. But, you know, it's interesting how you say, we got to see each other and it was fun. But it was for Ian's funeral. And I think, though, that what you said was that it was fun was also my feeling. And I kept thinking throughout the whole weekend that this is like the best party, but the guest of honor isn't there. It was so many mixed emotions. Number one, I'm so glad that I was there. And also, I just have to tell you, Marjorie, like, I have been to funerals before, and I think that they're so important, and I think they're so meaningful.
I do, too.
The tribute that you put together to your husband, I will never forget it as long as I live. I mean, I just never will. There was a point when we were sitting in the church together, and I want to talk about the priest who gave the message, you know, at some point here, because he was so amazing. And I realized that I wasn't just like crying, like crumpled up crying. I had tears pouring. My bra was wet because the tears were pouring out of my eyes and like funneling down
to your bra,
down my dress into my bra, because it was like a fountain of emotion. And that's the thing, like you just laughing there, that's like what we were doing the whole time. Yeah. We were crying and then we were laughing hysterically and then we were crying and then we were laughing hysterically. It was just unbelievably beautiful and heartbreaking all at once.
It has been, it hasn't even really been, maybe it's 11 weeks since my husband passed, since Ian passed. And for the last, as I was planning it all, I only get to do this once for him. Mm-hmm. And so I called my old videographer in Phoenix. And I said, you got to help me. We've got to put together a tribute for him. Because there were about 70 people that came from out of town, from all over the country, from every part of Ian's life, ranging from one of his best high school friends to all the way up to this part of our life here, where there were students that came to the funeral. And then I had a couple of students that came to the house on Saturday night. But one of the things that I decided as I was trying to put this together, and as people were saying, we'll be there. So we had people from Oregon, California, I mean, all over the country. And it was so wonderful. And the way that it worked out, I had realized that most people would be leaving Sunday. And so I couldn't really have a very long reception after the funeral. So I had everybody to the house on Saturday night. And it was so fun. I mean, there's just no other way to describe it. It was so fun to see people, because it's exactly what Ian would have loved. is people were exchanging numbers. And then I had friends from Atlanta. At one point during the night, I heard the most raucous laughter on my first floor. And I ran down, and a friend of mine from Atlanta was betting with a friend of mine from Minnesota, and they were making each other laugh. And it's absurd. I can't even get into the bet because it's so absurd and it wouldn't even translate, but they were dying with laughter. And I just thought, oh my God, Ian would love that Troy's meeting Keith. Like, here they are. And it was the night was filled with that. But then what was really special is the next day when we all gathered in the church, and it was a traditional Episcopal funeral service.
Beautiful.
I could feel like we were all connected.
Yeah.
Because we had been together the night before.
Yes.
So people met each other and knew each other and laughed about Ian. And then before everybody left on Saturday night, I had made this video tribute to Ian, which I realized as I was doing it in the end, I had sort of made it for myself just so that when I need it, I can go back and see my husband and see our life. But I shared it with everybody there. And so he was with us. But the key to the Sunday funeral were two things. The very Reverend Spencer Simrell gave the eulogy for Ian. And some people in Minnesota might know him. He's the former dean of the Cathedral of Minneapolis. But we knew him in Atlanta. And he was Ian's sponsor for ordination in the Episcopal Church in Minnesota. So I just so much wanted that part of Ian's life represented. And boy, did he represent.
I don't know. Listen, Marjorie, I've been to a lot of church services in my life, and I have never heard a message like that. And I've heard, I mean, my dad gave you were at our wedding when my dad gave the message there, and it was beautifully done. And I come from a long line of ministers. There was something transcendent about his message. I mean, I said to Dan and Amy from my talk, who I was traveling with, and we traveled back together. I mean, we were talking at the gate of the flight, and I said, even if you didn't know Ian, you would have been transported and fully inspired by this man's faith. It was so incredible. It was life-changing. And then what was so amazing about it too is that they gave communion. And can I just say, like, when churches say, when we offer communion, we would like anyone who practices to come and take communion, it just makes my heart so happy, because I didn't grow up like that. And I always found it so deeply upsetting when communion is limited. I just do not think that that is the way that Jesus would have walked. That's an aside. But
when it's an open table.
It's an open table. And that is how it should be. And he said, if you don't want to partake in the body of Christ, you can put your arms across your chest and I'll offer you a blessing. And I happened to be sitting at the very end, like closest to him in the front row as I was seeing him. And I was listening to these blessings, and he's looking into people's eyes and seeing them. And I think what made me so emotional about that is that's exactly how Ian looked at people. It's just like truly seeing people and truly just seeing, like, I see the good in you. I see everything amazing in you. And I just want you to see that too. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like Ian. But it was this man that I'd never met, but obviously he had such a long relationship with you and Ian, and it was just incredible. And there are just so few people on the earth who just look in people's eyes and see them. And I just keep saying about Ian that it's like if you were lucky enough to be like a little duckling that he like tucked under his wing as he was like waddling along in just like a super fancy looking well-feathered suit, that you were one of the lucky few. And all of his ducklings were there. I mean, I was just looking around your house, and I was looking around the church, and I was seeing that everyone had the same face on that I had. And it was because we all got so lucky to get picked up. And then the most beautiful thing was that your amazing priest just kept looking right at you, Marjorie. And just like, of everyone that he was talking to, the most important person was you. And that just like made my heart so full. And I was sitting next to you, so I got like a little bit of the glow, and that felt good too.
It was, I just felt Ian's presence there. And I was so proud of my boys who had to speak at the beginning of the ceremony.
Oh my gosh, they were incredible.
Of the service. I keep calling it a ceremony, but of the service. They were so strong. And then I had asked one of Ian's students who Ian met as an undergraduate, who actually does the is one of the students that does the football call for K-State, is also his undergraduate degree is in music. And so Colby helped me pick some of the music. And then I said, Colby, I want you to sing an aria, because Ian loved opera. Part of Ian's birthday celebration and Ian's funeral was on his birthday. And part of our tradition in our family is if we could, we would always go to an opera with Ian. And that was his birthday present. And when we lived in Minnesota and Ian was very involved with the Minnesota Opera Company, we would make the boys go. And let me tell you, there's nothing more than a 12 and a 10-year-old want to do is go to an opera, at least my children. But it was their dad's birthday present. And we would all go together. And then I took him to New York. And we just, it was always a part of our tradition. And so it just seemed it was Ian's birthday on March 3rd. And so we were able to have the aria integrated into the service. So as they were preparing communion, Colby stood up and sang an aria. It's from a German opera, but the aria was all about longing and the life of an artist. And it was so perfect and beautiful. And I don't think he'll mind me telling this. So when we were picking it, Colby said that he has a beautiful voice, just a beautiful voice.
It's,
and he said,
unbelievably
my
talented.
Voice isn't mature, hadn't been mature enough to sing this, because there's a part of it that your voice has to be able to carry and linger. And he said, my voice wasn't mature enough. And he's in graduate school now. And he said, I think I'm ready. I've never sang it before publicly, but I want to sing it for Ian. And so when he stood up, and we had beautiful piano, and we had, you know, there was a pianist there, and he stood up and he was standing up on the altar, and he just looked at me and just gave me a little wink. Like, I've got this. I've got this. And it was beautiful. So.
So beautiful.
It was a good, goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine, I gathered with a friend of mine and, my future daughter-in-law's parents, and we were all at the Hilton, and we were just sitting around. We were having barbecue, and my friend Mimi, who you probably met.
I met Mimi.
Who I've known since I was 11, so we were talking, and
I kept seeing everyone, and I was like, you're Mimi! You're this person! You're Jamie! It was just it was a lot of me yelling people's names high-pitched like that.
But she was talking about it, and she said, and I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but she just slipped and said wedding. And we sort of all sort of laughed. And then my son Gar said, thank you for saying that. That's what we wanted. We wanted it to be joy. And we wanted it to be a celebration. We wanted it to be about love. And I think that's why she slipped, is because, you know, when you go to a wedding and you just feel all that love. And I think that's what she felt, was all that love. And so we were like, that's like the best thing you could have said, because Ian would have loved that. He just would have loved that. What everybody was feeling was love.
I think everybody was also feeling just so in love with life, and like feeling inspired to live their life and to never take it for granted, and to see those connections and see other people as such amazing opportunities. One thing that just makes me feel so happy is that Ian knew that, and Ian knew that love from all those people in the room. I don't think there was anyone that was like, oh, I regret not telling Ian how I felt about him. I mean, it just wasn't like that. And the people that he collected weren't like that. So it just felt like this this just connection with all these sweet souls. Did I tell you I told Gar, your son, when I was texting him, I texted him and it was just like, hey, this is when I'm going to be in. Do you let me know? Like, is there anything I can pick up? Like, you know, I'm always right. thinking, does a person need an extra bag of ice? One right. generally might. So I don't know, you know, do you need anything? And he was like, no, I think we're all good. We have it all handled. I'll let you know if we need anything. And I said, okay, get prepared for an awkwardly long hug from me. And then he wrote back and he's like, that's kind of been the thing with people. So it's okay. I can handle the awkwardly long hug, but in just the best way of just feeling like there's just so many people who love Ian so much and love you and love Gar and love Campbell, and them speaking at the beginning of the service was just the most incredible thing. I don't know. I just think like you put so much thought into every detail. And number one, I think there's really a case for, I think traditionally we've thought that, you know, when I was a kid, I always thought like, oh, if someone dies, you have to have the funeral within the next 2 days, you know? And I right. know a lot of that's like kind of logistics about like right. the remains and all these different things.
Yeah. There was just a function of.
A function of that, of like, this is how right. you have to do it. But I also think that like giving yourself some space to think about how you wanted this to be and giving people some time to be able to show up and be there, that was really lovely. And that's hard because there's like a real sacrifice there because your whole world has been like, this is what you've been thinking about for weeks and weeks. And not that you wouldn't be thinking about it anyway, but it's just that planning goes mm-hmm. on forever. But it was such a gift. I mean, I texted you this. It was just such a gift that you gave to everyone, that putting together this most amazing tribute.
Thank you. But I think about the first 3 to 4 weeks after Ian
yeah.
died, and I was definitely in shock. And if I just really felt strongly that I just needed to be in that place with my boys and just really grieve it out and just really work it out. And one of the things Ian said to me when we were driving to the hospital the week that he died, he was so cute because we had to get to the hospital in Kansas City fast. And so I was packing up the bags and real quickly throwing things together. And we got in the car. And I mean, the amount of grace my husband showed in the last 3 months of his life, I can't even. But he was so cute. He was in the car and he's like, this is when you shine. No one else could do this but you. Because I am a producer. Like, it's my superpower of pulling 1,000 threads together and making things happen. And so when I was thinking about how I wanted everybody to be able to say goodbye, I just wanted to produce the hell out of it. And part of that is just it helped me grieve to know that I was at least using my talents to say goodbye. And it was funny. I had 2 cameras set up because I have to send his mother. I have to send his mother. She couldn't come. She's 95. And so everybody's like, are you streaming it? And it's like, I can't stream it. Like, I can't have a streaming camera. It's grainy. Like, I would find myself like. And then we went over. We had a Saturday rehearsal. And I went over and the head of the TV station here is a good friend of Ian. So he's got it under control. They've got the camera set up. Another student's there who's totally buttoned up. And they're doing camera placement. And I went over and I'm like, well, and I started to like, and then I looked at him like, you got this. I'm going to go now. I'm going to go now. But in a weird way, it's like Ian would have expected nothing less. Like, if I didn't use my talents in this moment, and I'm not saying like it was, I'm not overblowing this. It's just for me, organizing is what was helping me get through. It's just organizing. So I'm yeah. glad that I'm glad that people could feel the love because that was the point.
Oh, it's so true. I'm wondering, like everything you're saying, it's so impressive to me how self-aware you're being about what you need in any given moment. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how that, like where that's coming from and how you're doing that. That's really great. Cause I was really proud of myself for just taking Monday off after the funeral, because I was preemptively thinking like, oh, I did a long work trip and then I came back and then I got on a plane and then went to see you. And I was like, I am going to take that Monday off. Right. I'm going to do it. And I am so impressed with myself that I have this self-awareness that maybe for once I could prevent completely cracking instead of trying to pick up the pieces after I do crack. What a revelation. And that is like you're throughout this whole thing for weeks, I just feel like you've been so great at that, at just understanding what you need and how that shifts and then making decisions accordingly and unapologetically.
You know, part of it is I was married to him for 38 years. And I'm just grateful.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not angry. I'm just really grateful. And I miss him every day. But I feel like I just start the morning. I really try. It's not perfect, but I try every day. I mean, I talk to him all the time. But I just try every day to not. I feel like if I were angry that it happened, that it would diminish our life together. I don't have a space for it. He took such good care of me. And I don't want to diminish that. I don't ever want that to be tinged with anger or wasted time. He never wasted time. So I don't know. I think that's part of it. And I think that's part of it is I just can't. I just want it to be what it was in terms of like, I don't know, but that's where I am.
Also, I was like, I love being here and I hate the reason I'm here.
Yeah.
It was like a real juxtaposition.
The whole weekend was that way. Mm-hmm. And to see so many people that I haven't seen in so long who made a very long journey to come to get here. And that's the thing. I mean, I'm really blessed. And so was he.
Yeah.
And so was Ian. I mean, when I talk to my boys, I mean, I just miss Ian so much. And it just, like, I think about it and I don't want it to be this way. But Campbell will always just say, hey, Mom, it just is. It just is. So you can't look too far back. You can't look too far forward. I mean, you can really, and I can see how, and I resisted. I can see how I could get stuck in the grief of what we had planned our life to be. And you saw our little house. Our life was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's what we wanted. Like, it was just the two of us. I mean, obviously our kids, but they're in different cities. But our life was quiet and sweet. And we chose that. And so Ian's death sort of just busts that wide open. And so my life probably now is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And so that's the hard part for me is we live in a small town. We have this small, sweet house. Every day was kind of quiet. I'd go off to class. We'd meet for dinner on campus. I mean, it was just this sweet little life. And that's, if I look too much into that, that's where you spiral, is because that's gone. It's just gone. It was blown up and by his death. And so Campbell's very centering for me of it is. And now what do we do with that?
Well, he's such an amazing example of being in the present and working towards that and being on a journey towards that. And that's, and I think that's what's so interesting about a practice of being present. When you talk about, I've been thinking about everything that as being a practice, you know how they talk about like yoga is a practice, right? Like everything that you do is a practice. And that can have kind of two meanings, where it's something that you practice in order, like that's just what you do. But I think the practice is preparation for the really hard stuff in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the practice is so that that can get you through and can keep you grounded and keep you present. It's the same as like a spiritual practice or whatever it is that you're practicing is there for you. You do that and you have those things. And you always talk about like Ian's faith, but that's all grounded within you.
Yeah.
And this same inspiration from Campbell, that's all within you. I mean, he gets everything from you. And it's this practice to help you in the hardest thing that you'll have to go through.
Yeah. And I think one of the things Ian said when we were first married, and I don't think I was raised Catholic, and I didn't have a day-to-day faith. I think I was religious, but not spiritual, maybe is the distinction. Really having faith, I don't think that was a part of my religious practice growing up. And Ian would always say, you know, we were so broke when we got married. I mean, just so broke. And, you know, I was a rhetoric major and he's an English major and he's working in radio. And it was just, I mean, it's not like we were accountants and we could graduate and be like,
nobody majored in finance there, pun it.
Yeah. It was like we had to make our way. And Ian used to say to me, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, that God doesn't take us halfway. He doesn't take us halfway. And I can't express how deeply I believe that. And so I think about, okay, there's light here somewhere. And I hope, you know, over the weekend that there was light. There was light. But I'll tell you a funny story. So my sister's very worried about me. My sister, who's 2 years older than me, I know she just wants to scoop me up and put me in her pocket and carry me everywhere. And so she said, where do you want to go? And we all went to Phoenix because I have friends there. And so I spent the last week in Phoenix and she came to me and she's like, I've booked massages for us. Like she's just doing. And so we went to get massages and she went in first and then I went in second. And I'm usually pretty good at going away. When you get a massage, if you've never had one, find a way to get one. I'm pretty good at like, I can get to a state where I'm just thinking about nothing and really just
enjoying.
Yeah,
you're like half awake, half asleep.
Yeah,
I love that. Like that hovering feeling.
Yeah.
I get that in acupuncture naps. Oh my gosh. It's heaven.
Yeah, that feeling.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't. So I thought, okay, you're not getting there. So just think about Ian. And he used to rub, I mean, without getting too personal, I used to love him to rub my head and he used to rub my feet all the time. And
no, sir, that's not too personal. That's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
I was worried about what you're going to say there. And I was like, let's just keep this G-rated.
Yeah, no. I used to love a good foot. He would give the best foot massages. He had really strong hands. And so, you know, it almost hurt, but it was so good. So in the massage, I started thinking, well, you know, I've never had a massage where they didn't massage your feet at least a little bit, ever. And so I'm sort of waiting, and I can tell, you know, if you've had a massage before, you know sort of the routine of how it's going to happen. And I can sort of tell in my head, because of all those years in radio, you know, 60 minutes, you know, you're like, okay, we're getting close to the end here. And she takes a hot cloth and she sort of wipes my hands. And then she takes it and she wipes my feet with it, like very gently. And then she's like, you know, I hope you enjoyed this, you know, the very sort of masseuse voice. And she leaves the room. No foot massage.
Shoot.
And so my sister and I were laughing that Ian was somewhere up there saying, no, the feet are mine. The feet are mine. You don't get to do those. Those are mine. But it was like, it's so unrequited. Like my feet are like, wait, what? Like, it's just so weird. Because you look for, I can see why people go to psychics, because you look for signs. You look for signs that he's around. So that's my sign, is that I didn't get my feet rubbed by the masseuse.
Oh my gosh, he's totally around. Totally is around. That's just, it's the love.
Yeah.
Totally around.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very fun. But now you're going to have to figure out what to do with your feet. Like, you could go see a reflexologist. You know,
I think I'm going to have to, because they're just like, they don't feel like the rest of my body. So.
They're like tense. Boy, a massage is really, that is, I just had a massage in Hawaii and I was like in that same, just hovering, and I could hear the waves. And it was in one of those little outdoor, it was like an outdoor hut. I realized, I'm like, they don't need, isn't this a funny realization? I was like, they don't need the ocean music because it just is here.
They have the real thing.
I don't even see a machine playing the ocean waves because the actual ocean waves, I can hear them. It was very wonderful and relaxing and the best.
The sound of the water. The sound of the water. And if we're going to talk about sound of the water, let's talk about the water from the French Alps.
Oh, should we?
I think we should.
This would be a very nice time to thank again our presenting sponsor of Best to the Nest, which is Pormois Climate Smart Skincare, affordable luxury skincare from France. This is the skincare that I've used for 3 years. I cannot get enough of it. You know, it was just hockey week in Minnesota, so the tourney was going on. And so Pormois ads air in the XL and then on 45 TV during the coverage. Jay, my husband, said to me, I'm going to need you to just write out your Pormois routine, because I have gotten 45 texts and individual conversations from people who say, is that really all your wife uses? Is that the skincare she uses? And he's like, yes, it's on the counter. This is all I see. Yes. This is what it is. But it really is. I think when people hear about it and understand how different it is and then see the results, it's really shocking and so amazing. So we're fortunate enough to have a promo code. It's NEST, N-E-S-T. You get an extra 20% off with a 100% money back guarantee. So you can go to pormoiskincare.com. That's P-O-U-R-M-O-I skincare.com. Use the code NEST and you'll get that extra 20% off.
It's just been, it's been remarkable. And it was really cute because my sister brought all of her Pormois to Phoenix.
She was talking to me about it.
She's had a really stressful time because she's just finishing up. She's going to retire in 3 years, but she just went through her last series of being on call. She's an anesthesiologist. And so she's just had like a couple of tough months of just, and she'll do trauma and all of that stuff. So you can only imagine. So she was really excited to bring like her little skincare routine. She's like, show me how to use it. Like, okay. You do this one. Then this one, then this one. She's like, that's it. I'm like, yes, it's very easy.
I promise you, it is not, it's not that difficult. It sounds like when you're like, oh, it's a system, but it really is a very simple system. And it's like a beautiful 90 seconds of just taking care of your skin, and it makes all the difference. Okay. So speaking of that, how else are you taking care of yourself? The massage, what are we doing on a daily basis? Please tell me it doesn't involve like Mountain Dew or something like that. Of course not.
You know, I just got back. So today's the first day I've been home. I'm letting myself sleep a little bit late. I had a paper due. You would have loved this. I had a paper due last night at 11:59. My flight was delayed. The Wi-Fi on the plane didn't work. And so I grabbed my bag. I got to the airport, to the baggage claim at 11:40. I grabbed my bag. I'm sitting on the floor in the airport, proofing my paper. I got it off, I think, at 11:56.
This is great. This is the kind of minute maximizing that I really respect.
I mean, I looked insane. I don't know what people thought I was doing. And it's like, I mean, they must have thought like I had some high-level project. No, I'm a graduate student and I'm turning in my illustrator's profile. That's what the paper was about. It was a really good paper. So this morning, I'm just letting myself, I sleep a little bit late. We're in spring break here. So I'm just taking it easy and trying to sleep and trying to eat better. I will say the one thing, and I think this is worrying my sons a little bit. The one thing that has happened is I have completely lost my appetite. So I just don't, I just forget to eat. And so I've lost quite a bit of weight, which this isn't the way you want to do it. It's just not the way you want to do it. And I know, and so my older son in particular is like, Mom, you need to take care of yourself. So I'm trying to do that. I'm trying to eat better. But I say that, and then somebody very sweet gave me a box of Captain Crunch to make me feel better. And honestly, that's all I want to eat tonight, is I just want to go have a bowl of Captain Crunch with whole milk. That sounds
We've talked exciting. About Captain Crunch before on this show. Yeah. Remember when you had that Crunchberry situation? For some reason, I re-listened to that episode and you were talking about that Crunchberry story and it was very funny.
Yes. So I have Captain Crunch waiting for me. But so I'm trying to eat better because I know if I don't, I'm going to get sick. I mean, you just can't not eat. It's just not good.
Okay. And I have two words for you and you know what they are.
What?
Bone broth.
Oh, geez.
I'm going to give you some. And I got a box. My mom just sent me some pre-made bone broth she was excited about. So I'm going to test it out. And if I like it, I'll talk about it on the podcast.
Oh, excellent. And I do, you know, my sister does everything you tell us and everybody to do.
I love her.
My sister's like your biggest follower. And she's like, she's drinking bone broth. She's got red light therapy. Yes. We talked about
all these things.
Yeah, she's all in.
I will say just in terms of like our collection of nesters, who all of you are so wonderful. And even if we don't know you personally, we feel like we do. But the amount of people at your home who like would hear my voice and then go, Elizabeth, you're Elizabeth. It was so fun because I'm not quite as used to that. You know, I mean, my voice, like I don't work in radio full time. So most times people see me and they recognize me, but the like bird call of the voice from the other side of the room is always very entertaining. And it was really sweet to see how many people in your life love the podcast and listen to the podcast and make it part of their day and want to chat with us about it.
Yeah. And again, all of the sweet messages, I feel the love, I feel the concern, I feel all of it. And I'm grateful for that. I mean, it's just been, as I said before, when I talk about gratitude, I mean it. There has been an absolute avalanche of love. And now I'm mixing up some metaphors, so I'm not even going to go down. I'll just say this. I wouldn't be standing without all of it. I wouldn't be standing. And I would be crumpled up in a ball somewhere. But it's like, it's been amazing. And it's been so kind. And I will spend the rest of my life pushing that love right back out into the world.
Do it. You do it every day. Marjorie, I love you.
I love you too.
If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and give us a review at Apple Podcasts.
Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Best of the Nest. We are the podcast that brings you home.